Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning. Live from Bonn in Germany, these are our main stories. Zimbabwe raises the number of people facing extreme food shortages from 3 to 4 million. This is a result of the El Nino-induced drought that's causing havoc in southern Africa.
One third of all food that is produced, one third is lost from the time it's harvested to the time it is consumed. We believe that these figures are too high.
And how secure is West Africa following jihadist attacks in three countries, the most recent being in Grand Bassam, Ivory Coast? We turn to neighboring Ghana to assess the level of security in public places.
Once the person is entering with something that is not permitted to enter into the store, like a gang or maybe knives, we can easily know it.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Wednesday, March the 16th, and I am your host, Abubakar Jallo. Don't go too far.
Top story.
The food crisis in Zimbabwe is getting worse. The southern African country raised the number of Zimbabweans now requiring food aid from 3 to 4 million. The UN agencies, UNICEF, also says that tens of thousands of children now require urgent medical treatment for malnutrition. The reason given for the food shortage is drought induced by El Nino. But even without adverse weather conditions, food is being lost. A workshop to help smallholders prevent such losses has been organized by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and is taking place, perhaps aptly enough, in Zimbabwe this week. Columbus Mavunga has more.
Poor rains induced by the El Nino weather phenomenon have hampered food production, and the diminishing reserves have left many people in rural parts of Zimbabwe short of essential supplies. The current drought, primarily caused by El Nino, has caused hunger in most African countries, especially in the Horn of Africa and in Southern Africa. In an interview with the media, Chimimba David Piri, the head of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, for Southern Africa, talked about the magnitude of the losses.
The losses are very bad. It is estimated that one third of all food that is produced, one third is lost from the time it's harvested to the time it is consumed. So we believe that these figures are too high to be maintained at the current levels. In a year like this one, where most countries in Southern Africa have been affected by El Nino, the little harvest that is coming out, one third of it is also lost to food loss. You know, the food insecurity will increase.
According to the UN's FAO, the magnitude of food losses is very high, with the yearly global quantitative food losses in sub-Saharan Africa at about 20% for cereals. The meeting of food insecurity in Africa could not have been held in a better place than a country which has been a perennial food beggar for its citizens. It takes place as Zimbabwe announces that the number of those in need of food aid had worsened to 4 million. Here is Zimbabwe Social Welfare Minister Prisca Mfumira.
Because of the state of disaster declared by the president, the compilation of the new beneficiary registers has now been finalized. Indications are that the figure of vulnerable households requiring food assistance could be as high as 4 million people. We have now started on checking if any of these can work in return for food aid, while the rest will be regarded as vulnerables.
After Zimbabwe made an appeal for assistance to feed 3 million people, the United Nations said it had raised about $80 million to avert severe hunger in the Southern African country, which had said required $1.5 billion. With the new figure of 4 million, that amount has to be revised further. Zimbabwe is one of the African countries affected by El Nino. In the Horn of Africa, the government of Prime Minister Hail Mariam Desalegn earlier this year appealed for assistance to feed more than 10 million Ethiopians facing hunger. The UN says these figures can be reduced if food losses are addressed by proper storage facilities and ensuring that pests and insects do not affect harvested food.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. The question of how to avoid food losses in Africa is clearly a vital one, so my colleague Mark Caldwell put it across to Nahima Moha. She is a lecturer in food security at the University of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania.
We have the problem also of pesticides. Pests who are eating the harvested crops. In short, pests, we have also preservative mechanism where they can preserve the collected harvesting crops for longer time. We don't have means of preserving them for longer time. Sometimes we have some kind of using the food unwisely, which I can say, because sometimes we spend a lot of food during celebration and then the most of food is wasted, so we need to go for that also. Changing our mind of thinking is very important. Because most of the time, the government are the one which is concentrating on keeping the reserve for the citizen. But most of the people, they are selling everything after harvesting. So we need to start from the ground floor to the nationwide to preserve food so that at least we can have share for the whole year.
The FAO said recently that more than a quarter of food produced in sub-Saharan Africa was lost. Is this a problem that can be solved in a generation?
Yeah, it's possible. It's very possible because nowadays many people, most of the local, especially women, they're introduced to small agribusiness where they can preserve different kind of food, fruits, they can keep for longer time. So it's possible. And then because of the shortage of food, which most people have experienced, people, they get new knowledge, people, they change the way they behave. So I believe it's possible, very possible to change. Food which we produce is also enough if we can distribute it in different areas. From the source where it's produced to other parts where they have a lot of problem with the food, it's enough.
What about the problems that Zimbabwe is facing as far as food loss is concerned?
Maybe because of the politics issues can be also a cause, because if you don't have political stability, so it's a great issue. And also the infrastructure, because also we need infrastructure. From the source where the food is produced to go to remote area, it's an issue, because some people in certain patches have a lot of food, but in other areas, people, they are facing problem of hunger because they don't have means, and then the environment is not conducive for production. So infrastructure, political stabilities, also the means of preserving the food. I think that is also a great idea which should be considered.
Naima Moha, lecturer in food security at the University of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Now, Ghana's immediate neighbor to the West Africa country of Ivory Coast was hit by a jihadist attack at the weekend that left 18 people dead. Now, this is not the first time that one of Ghana's neighbors has been targeted in this manner. There was an attack on a hotel and a restaurant in Burkina Faso in January and a hostage taken in South Mali in November. But how is Ghana responding to the serious breaches of security on the other side of its borders? Isaac Kaleji in Accra has been investigating and now filed this report.
Security officials at a popular hotel in Ghana's capital Accra subjecting me to vigorous security checks before allowing me access to the facility. No visitor to this hotel can escape this daily routine. Such checks here and other public places have intensified after terrorists attacked neighboring countries like Ivory Coast and Burkina Faso. But the lack of heavy police presence elsewhere worries a security officer who spoke to me under condition of anonymity.
But what's in confidence I'm telling you is that we are doing every effort to keep the guests safe. The rather unfortunate thing that has happened that we are not happy, you understand this. Initially, we were having this police presence because we brought them and they stationed them at the trade fair.
The trade fair the security man referred to is a business center, although inactive for now in Accra. What he wishes for is for police officers to patrol hotels, shopping malls, among others, where huge numbers of people, both locals and foreigners, visit. I have just arrived at the Achimota shopping mall and I observe that security isn't tighter here. There are no screenings and vigorous checks, although security officers are scattered around. This security officer, Nicholas Kwe, says not screening shoppers doesn't mean security isn't at its highest level.
When the person enter, we look at the person very well because the person cannot know that we are watching him. That's why we have the place where we stand. Because once the person is entering with something that is not permit to enter into the store, like a gang or maybe knives, we can easily know it.
For some shoppers, they just don't feel safe. Here is one of them.
Security is not that tight because if any attack has, it should be there. I don't think the security will be so successful for those people who are there. They are not secure at all.
For many who find this worrying, the country's Inspector General of Police, John Kudalo, says nothing is being left to chance. He told journalists his outfit is revising its strategy by focusing on intelligence-based approach.
Winning the fight against terrorism is not a one-sided venture. It goes beyond military strength. I'm directing commanders to ensure that all policing activities are intelligence-driven. Commanders are therefore directed to take steps to cultivate informants and use other innovative community-based mobilization policing techniques to solve community challenges, as well as fishing out potential terrorist networks and other criminals.
But African security expert Dr. Emmanuel Kwesi Enin has shredded into pieces the preparedness of African countries for terrorist attacks.
In every single African country, we cannot prosecute terrorists because we see the terrorist response strategy as a military strategy. We send in the military, we send in the police, we send in customs. Before the forensics get there, all the evidence has been destroyed. So we need to change our thought processes and to say, how do we have a collaborative interagency approach to understanding and to responding to terrorism?
As damning as these assessments about the country's readiness to contain any possible attacks may appear, Ghana's Deputy Interior Minister James Agalga says there is no cause for alarm.
Adequate measures have been put in place to contain any such situation in the unlikely event that it occurs. And so there is no cause for alarm. People should not panic. We're on top of the issues.
Ghana hasn't recorded any form of terrorist attacks, making it one of the safest areas in the sub-region. But public discussions on various media platforms show that Ghanaians generally wish current security measures can at least better protect them against any potential attacks.
Isaac Kaleji in Accra.
Behind the headlines.
And in Behind the Headlines, we continue with part 3 in our series about human trafficking, written by DW Africa correspondent Adrian Krish and Jan-Philip Scholes. This installment, adapted for Africa Link by Isaac Mugabe, takes our correspondents to Agadez, the largest city in central Niger in the Sahara Desert, and it's also a notorious haunt for human traffickers. The authorities there appear unwilling or unable to stop the traffickers from plying their trade.
Agadez was once a crossroads for ancient trading routes. Tuareg salt caravans used to pass through Agadez while on their way to destinations across West Africa. Today, this legendary desert city is a transit hub for migrants and people smugglers. Every week, 2,000 African migrants begin their journey to the north with hopes of reaching Europe. Accompanied by armed guards, our correspondents Jan, Philip and Adrian look out for women who are trying to make their way to Europe. There is no shortage of them in Agadez, but they are clearly reluctant to speak to foreign reporters. With the help of a colleague from a Nigerian TV station, two women agreed to meet with our correspondents in the evening to tell their story, provided they remain anonymous. One of the women is from Nigeria, and she's been in Agadez for 2 weeks. She does not want to reveal who is helping her get to Europe. She would like to go to Italy.
I feel like to go another country.
One of them tells us her plan is to travel from here to Libya and then to Italy. She says she knows Italy from films and thinks it must be a beautiful country.
It's a nice country.
She trusts only her roommate who grew up in Niger. The roommate explains that more and more young women from Nigeria are turning up in Agadez.
They don't stay long, 3 or 4 months at the most. They try and earn some money and then continue on their way. Around 7 at night, they're all out on the street to try and earn enough for a bite to eat.
A large part of the local economy is based on illegal commerce with people fleeing poverty. In the last few years, 7 banks have opened in the city and small money transfer shops can be found on almost every corner. The chaos in neighboring Libya plays right into the hands of the people smugglers in Agadez. From this city in Niger in the Sahara Desert, the people smugglers can reach the Mediterranean without strict border controls. The governor of Agadez downplays the problem, saying the international community is responsible.
We often restrain migrants from heading across the desert when conditions are too dangerous or when we know they want to cross borders illegally, for example, to work in prostitution. But at the moment, there's nothing we can do at the border. We don't have enough resources.
But on the outskirts of Agadez, as our correspondents discovered, it's evident that the government is doing little to stop people smuggling. Locals have a name for the overloaded trucks and vans heading to the desert, the Mande Convoy. Everyone here is familiar with it, but none of them can say how many of these vehicles will actually reach the Mediterranean.
You've been listening to part 3 in our series about human trafficking, written by DW Africa correspondents Adrian Krish and Jan Philip Scholz. You can find more about that series on our website, dw.com/Africa.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
To Burundi now, where the government has reacted angrily to the decision by the European Union to suspend direct financial aid to the country over its failure to contain the recent wave of violence. The Burundian government even went too far as to allege that the EU's decision would encourage terrorism. Our correspondent in Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niyirora, begins this report with the European Union's ambassador to Burundi, Patrick Spellet, explaining why financial aid had been cut off.
We consider that our main concerns have not been addressed properly through those different kinds of dialogue. We've discussed all our areas of concern with the Burundi's authorities. We consider at the end of that meeting that our preoccupation was not properly addressed and that the conclusion was not satisfactory.
However, the EU will channel its support to the country NGOs. Patrick Spirle said full cooperation can only resume when and if the government takes steps to improve the political situation in the country.
We are ready to resume progressively our full cooperation with the country, but according to some expected political benchmarks by the Burundi's authorities.
Reacting to the EU suspension of aid, government spokesman Philippe Nzobonariba said the sanctions will only strengthen anti-government forces.
The government deplores that the EU, by taking such a conclusion, didn't take into account significant progress, efforts taken by the government to improve on security despite challenges caused by terrorist groups that target civilians and security forces. The situation is now under control. The EU's decision may unfortunately encourage those terrorists who will interpret this move as a reward to their activities.
The EU provides Burundi with half of its budget, of part of this money goes to the payment of salaries of civil servants. Ordinary Burundians are concerned that such sanctions will negatively impact government plans.
The government will not be able to get the salaries of its workers. Civil society organizations that were strong, they have gone in exile. Here in Burundi, we remain with a very weak civil society organization. The EU will not agree with the very weak civil society organization and refuse to give the sufficient support.
Those sanctions will have a great impact on the population and also on the government, because when that aid is offered, I think that that aid will reach those organizations that work with the population. As far as there are few NGOs that are still working in Burundi, that means that a small part of the population is going to benefit from the aid.
It should be recalled that since April last year, Burundi is facing a political crisis caused by a third term of President Pierre Nkurunziza, considered as a violation of the Arusha Agreement and the National Constitution.
Apollinaire Niyorora in Bujumbura.
Opinion.
Zimbabwe says 4 million of its citizens now need food aid, and the UN Children's Agency UNICEF also says the Southern African country is facing its worst malnutrition crisis in 15 years, with tens of thousands of children requiring urgent medical treatment. Zimbabwe this week is hosting an FAO workshop on food loss. In opinion, we would like you to tell us how big a problem food loss is in your country and how effective are the strategies designed to prevent it. And also, we've just been hearing the European Union has suspended direct financial support for the Burundian government after concluding that it had not done enough to find a political solution to a conflict that has so far cost more than 400 lives. Now, the EU funds about half of Burundi's annual budget. Do you think that by removing this aid, the EU will actually help to resolve this crisis? Do let us know your thoughts on one or both of these questions in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, in a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or in an SMS to +49 160 957 595 10. And we will be airing your views on these topics in your say this coming Friday here on AfricaLink.
For more about AfricaLink, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about AfricaLink's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter. dw.com/AfricaLink.
And before we leave you, a quick reminder of the main stories. The food crisis in Zimbabwe is getting worse. 4 million Zimbabweans now require food aid, and the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, also says that tens of thousands of children now require urgent medical treatment for malnutrition. The Burundian government has accused the European Union of encouraging terrorism after it decided to suspend direct financial aid to the country. We've also been looking at security in public places in Ghana following this weekend jihadist attack in neighboring Ivory Coast. Also, an update on that report on that attack in Ivory Coast. Al-Qaeda's North Africa branch, Akim, has released a statement saying the attack on the Ivorian beach resort town of Grand Bassam, which killed 18 people, was a revenge for a French offensive against Islamist militants in the Sahel region. And the militants are also now calling on France to withdraw its forces from the region. There, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. As always, thank you for listening. My name is Abubakar Jallo, and I will be right back here tomorrow again. But for now, I wish you a splendid day, and bye now. We'll be right back.